Okay. My name is Jonathan Gerland. Today's date is July 29, 2010. I'm at the History Center today with Mr. Richard Albrecht, who I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you were came on the school board at the Diabaw Independent School District in April of 1965. I believe you came on the board with Mr. Pavlik.
That's correct, Carl Pavlik.
And so maybe to begin, we may, excuse me, jump around a little bit, but just how did you come to serve on the school board? Maybe why? Just what brought you to serving on the school board?
Well, at that particular time, there were several of us younger people then who had children in school, and we were concerned about whether they would have sufficient background when it came time to go to college to be accepted into college. And several of us got together and met at one time, Carl Pavlik, Mr. Stubblefield, Mr. Denman, Stacy Cook, myself, and discussed the problems we thought the school had. And we decided that a couple of us would run for school board that year, and then maybe a couple more run the next year to try to, pack the school board so we could make some changes that we thought needed to be made. At that time, of course, we had Mr. Wilbur Pate as superintendent, and he had been there a number of years. And we thought that maybe time had passed him by, and it was time to make some changes at the top. So Carl and I ran for school board that year, and the others worked behind the scenes to try to help get us elected. And as it turned out, we got elected. And then a year later, Mr. Cook and Mr. Shepherd ran, and they got elected. So it wasn't really necessary to make the change we anticipated, because Mr. Pate was ready to retire, and he retired at the end of that year, I believe. So all turned out for the best, and we had a good relationship on the school board. There were, at that time, the three members of the board were, you shouldn't say that you were college educated and they weren't or something, but they didn't feel the need, I don't believe, quite for the background the children needed. They didn't feel that they weren't getting it in Diabaw. And I should say that the kids were able to go to college, but they had to work that much harder, I think, than they had to later on down the line, because they were better prepared.
So just to summarize, basically your reasons would, and you know, tell me if I'm not expressing it correctly, but just a general concern about education quality overall. If that was true, where did integration, did racial integration factor into any of those concerns? Did it ever come up in any of those meetings before you came on the school board? Was that ever mentioned, discussed, talked about?
Not as such about whether we should integrate or not, but Carl and I, when we were running for board, we went over to the Temple School at that time. It was the black school. And, you know, everything's supposed to be separate but equal. And if it had been nationally, things might be different than they are today. But anyway, we went over there, and we were just amazed that they didn't have anything to work with at that school. We went to the chemistry and biology lab, and there was not a test tube, not a microscope, not anything. And Mr. Massey, the principal, was doing the best he could with what he had, but it just wasn't right that they didn't have anything to work with. They just had to get by.
Now, I've asked everybody a little bit about their own personal background, which includes their education, and so you've alluded to that a little bit, but just for the sake of the interview, go ahead and tell us a little bit about your own personal background. Maybe, you know, don't have to go into a whole lot of detail, but just maybe where you were born, where you were raised, just your family values, just what type of family, and then your own education as well.
Okay. Well, I was born in Casa Grande, Arizona. My father was a minister, but he died when I was 10, and my mother was a school teacher and eventually became the first female principal in that area in Arizona. And I went to the University of Arizona, graduated in 1951 with a B.S. in pharmacy. And when I went to school, there was a small black school. The town I lived in didn't have many black people, but it had a small black school with maybe 50 or 60 students in it. And it was right next to the junior high school. And while I was in high school, they went ahead and integrated at that without being required to. It was just the thing to do. They integrated in 1949.
49, okay. Wow.
Because we had some black kids on the basketball and football teams with us and so forth. And we'd always gone to school with the Mexican kids. They put the Mexican children, if they couldn't speak English, for the first two grades in separate rooms, but they immersed them in English pretty much, and starting the third grade, they were with us. And in fact, I just talked to a friend of mine who was one of those students, and he's a doctor of education now. But I never thought he would finish high school. But anyway.
So you came from a fairly progressive community background, and education was a key, I'm assuming, from your mother's
right.
experiences. So that is interesting. I'm sorry, I kind of cut you off.
No, that's okay. That was...
Okay. Well, what brought you to dive ball?
Well, I was... working in Arizona for a fella who I didn't care about working for him so much, and there was no opportunity in Arizona, even back at that time, much for independents to have their own store.
You're talking about as a pharmacist?
Yes,
yes, sir.
Because the California chains had already taken over a good part of the state, and so we just came out, and I took the state board here. And Mr. Hatton Simpson from Tyler called me. He was president of the board at that time and offered me a job. And so they sent me to Lufkin. And we moved to Lufkin in 1961. And then he moved me down to open a new store in Dieball, which was over across the road over here. And I stayed with him until 1964. And then friend and I opened a small store in the Dixon Furniture Building there.
Here in Dieball,
mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. And who was your partner?
Well, Chester Anding had a small pharmacy up in Lufkin. And
what was that last name?
Anding, A-N-D-I-N-G.
Okay.
And he was my partner. I bought him out after 3 years.
Okay.
But
now you mentioned your children and the background of parents who were concerned about just the quality of education in the community. So tell us a little bit about your children. What ages
okay,
were they?
Well, my oldest child is a girl. At that time we moved here, she was five. And anyway, she went to school here. She finished sixth in her class. And she started college at Stephen F. Austin, and she messed around and played and went out. And she eventually joined the service and She spent 4 years in the Air Force, 2 years on Guam. And then she went back to Stephen F. Austin and got her teaching degree and did that for a year. Went back in the Air Force and officers trained, and was an officer for about 4 years when she met her husband. And she lives in right outside Tampa, Florida. My son was 3 when we moved here, and he was salutatorian of his class, and he went to college down at the University of Houston, and is a pharmacist and owns his own drugstore in Pineland right now.
Okay. Now, so you were on the school board. I've forgotten how long went
from 65 to 77.
77. Okay, so. You were on the school board then the whole time that your daughter was in school, is that right? Or
yeah, my son too. Got to give them both their diplomas.
Oh, okay.
But my youngest child, my daughter, wanted me to stay on, but I got off the year before she graduated.
Okay.
And she was 3rd in her class, and she's a school counselor over at Dripping Springs outside of Austin.
Okay. And we may come back to them in the context of... you know, just information that they might have shared with you, or if you asked them about, you know, the integration process. But going back specifically to the integration issue, where would you say it was as an issue when you came on the board in April of 65? I know there was a lot of other things going on at the time, but where would you say that was on? You know, as a pressing need, or, and I don't want to lead you on, but.
Well, yeah, you know, of course, it was a need because of the condition that the school was in and what they had. But they're really, as far as I'm concerned, I don't recall a lot of discussion about integration. Like you said, our problems were monetary more at the time than they were integration. And, of course, it wasn't long until it came up. But
right. Well, I think... And going back and looking at the school board minutes in May of 65, I don't know if it was the very first meeting that you attended, but would have been one of the earliest, of course, was when the Freedom of Choice Plan was adopted. And I think Carl Pavlik made the motion to adopt it, and you seconded it. I thought that was kind of interesting, that, especially in the context of what you were saying, that, you know, how you and Mr. Pavlik came to serve on the board. And then so the two new guys were the ones who at least made the motion and seconded to do that.
It doesn't really ring a bell this day.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing about oral history. It's always interesting what sticks out in people's memory and what doesn't, and that kind of thing.
Could I have some water?
Sure, sure.
Some water.
So. Sure, let me, I'll just step up here.
Oh, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. I'll take a sip myself.
Well,
need some help.
There it goes.
Those little safety caps are... well, just to maybe, if this will refresh your memory, what had just immediately happened before you and Mr. Pavlik came on board was there was a lot of consolidation of the schools across the county, but where Dybalk was concerned, the Beulah and the Burke students. In fact, I believe that's how Mr. Capps came to serve on the board, and he eventually became president of the board. Yeah. I guess during yours, Mr. Pavlik's time, or at least there in the beginning. Anything you can remember about that? Just some issues that were connected with that. I know, obviously, you know, funding might be, but the influx of new students, the need for facilities, maybe.
Right at that time, I don't recall much about it. I know that the people at Beulah and the people at Fairview and so forth weren't thrilled about coming in with Diabol, but because of the monetary situation, it became necessary. And our facilities, we of course did have a need, and it wasn't too long after Buddy Temple came on the board that we got our first gym over here at this. That was our first building project. The buildings were all run down and needed a lot of work, and school owed $50,000. Doesn't sound like much now, but at that time we were in debt $50,000 when we came on the board. And we went and visited with Mr. Temple, and he agreed to get us out of debt provided we budgeted right and didn't get in debt again. And as far as I know, we've never had that problem since, unless we never did while we were on the board. But I just don't recall any of those.
That's good. Now, you mentioned Mr. Temple, Arthur Temple Jr., Buddy's mm-hmm. father. And this is a question I've asked everybody as well, and I'm trying to do it without leading you on or putting words in your mouth, but overall, just did he have any role in the integration process, Mr. Arthur Temple Jr.? Role, non-role? How would you? I'll start off real broad, and then maybe we'll get more specific.
Mr. Temple never, as far as I know, never said anything to the board or the superintendent or anything about integrating. Since the integration, I know he's said in 100 speeches probably that he integrated the schools. And I have no doubt that what he asked the feds to come down and talk to us, which they didn't talk to us. They sent out a letter and talked to, I think, Mr. Foster, the superintendent at the time. And
he took Mr. Pate's place.
Yes. Uh-huh. And they told him that we were going to be the first school to integrate in this area, and I just know that Mr. Temple has sent him down here because he himself didn't have anything to do with it as far as telling us, but like he said, he bragged about it from then on, and so I don't have any doubt that what he did. But what he did that, and you know, it was the thing to do, I think.
Well, you answered some of the specifics, and that was, you know, did he ever approach you, the school board, you know, if you knew of any talk or anything like that, and I think everybody's pretty much answered pretty much the same way, that, you know, that no, he didn't come directly. And again, you alluded to a few other things that jogged my memory. You know, I'll try to put it in the form of a question, but just a little bit of the background at the time, you know, Diabol had just recently incorporated as a municipality in 62. It was very progressive in a lot of ways, of course. The plywood plant, I think, came in 64, opened up in 64, and the company, Temple Industries at the time, to make room for the plywood plant, was where the historically black neighborhood was, and so a lot of those houses were moved out. There was federal money coming into Diabol.
Yeah.
The new public library was a federally funded project. The housing projects was some of the earliest housing urban development projects, and so, you know, if you look back historically, you know, a lot of those pieces do fit into the puzzle with the federal involvement of the schools.
Yeah,
of course, in 64 was the civil rights legislation, which gave gave teeth, I guess, to the Brown versus School Board of Education in 1954. But it's interesting, you know, I appreciate your answer there about, you know, his role, direct or indirect, or the company. What about talk on the town? And if you wanted to comment on that, go ahead. I mean, about Mr. Temple and...
Well, on the board, when it came time to vote on it, it was a 4-3 split. And Mr. Connor and Mr. Smith and Mr. Capps voted against it, and the other four of us voted for it. And that made it difficult because a lot of people then thought, well, the three who voted against it didn't help the situation any because they said it wasn't necessary, even though the federal people had said that we had to do it. They just didn't believe we had to, and it seemed as though they would have been willing to spend money to fight it, which would have, you know, wouldn't have ended well from their point of view anyway. But it made it difficult in the town. Every time I hear Mr. Temple say, well, I integrated the schools, I thought, well, he maybe did, but he didn't pay the price because Carl and I, being in business in town, boy, we paid the price. I'd been in business 1 year for myself, and my business dropped 50% that year. And Carl's dropped too, I don't know how much. But I had one gentleman, and I appreciated him. I don't know if I should even say his name or not, but it's Mr. Charles Morris. He was a fine gentleman, and he and his family traded with me. And after the vote on integration, he came in and told me, he said, you know, he respected me and what I felt I had to do, but he just couldn't trade with me anymore under those circumstances because he didn't think it was right to integrate. And he didn't want black people and white people going to school together. Well, a little less than a year later, I admired him because he came back and told me he had made a mistake. And what broke the ice with him was he took his mother to the hospital, and she was on welfare, and she had to share a room with a black lady. And he raised a little cane trying to get that changed, and it didn't work. And he was man enough to come and say, you know, that he was wrong. And I always thought well of him for that reason. But I never heard so much said about integration as just the fact that people quit trading with me.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that. Because that's some follow-up questions was, you know, if constituents, you know, who elected you ever came to you and talked to you about it or anything like that.
Then, of course, when it came time to run for board again, well, Carl and I wondered a lot. But people by that time had come to accept it, whether they wanted to or not, and everything went well from then on. The integration, as I thought, went very well. There was just never any big major problems that I saw. As happens a lot, I think, and from what I hear other people say, and my daughter's teaching in other schools, that the boys got along really well. There was very little problem with the boys in fighting or anything, but the girls, it was tough. If there was a fight, it was girls fighting.
We've heard some of those stories. So you got that information from your children then?
Yeah.
Did you ever ask your children, you know, both as a parent and as a person on the school board, you know, how is this working? Do you ever remember any kind of discussions like that? How is the integration working? I guess your son then would have had his whole experience would have been an integrated experience, right? If he was only three when you...
Yeah, he was born in 58, so he started school about 60. Yeah, that's...
Okay. But your daughter might have... Would she have gone to school before integration? A couple years maybe or not?
Yeah, probably just 1 year, I think, because she went to the first grade at St. Cyprian's. Okay. And then second grade up here.
Okay. And really, just so you understand where my questioning was coming from, is, you know, if maybe they had gone, had a little bit of experience of going to a, you know, just with white children, and then now integration begins, and, you know, was it different and anything like that? And that may not be applicable.
Yeah, I don't really, I don't recall that they ever commented on it. Of course, they would tell, they might tell that something went on about a little tussle between this one or that one or whatever, but they never commented on it. And in fact, all my children had some black friends at school. They never had a problem with it that I know of in any way. Of course, they didn't always tell me everything. So.
Yes, sir. What about some of the individuals involved in the process? I'll throw out a few specifics, but for instance, I don't know who to throw out first. let's start with Willie Massey.
Oh yeah.
What can you remember about Willie Massey, and what would you care to share about him in the process?
Well, Willie was a fine gentleman. As I said, Carl and I went over there before we were elected, and he showed us around. And he never ran down the school board or anything as far as not giving them enough support, which, like I said, we didn't do, hadn't done. But Willie was a gentleman, and he was a pretty good politician. He knew how to get along, and I think we made him principal of the school over there, as I recall. I think it was a difficult transition for him, because there are some children, some parents, you know, who still didn't like the idea of a black person telling them what to do or telling their children what to do. But overall, he did a good job, but I think he was glad when retirement came. But now his wife, Ms. Massey, of course, she was a wonderful lady, an excellent teacher, and just the finest lady, you know, as fine as anybody I've ever known. And she may have had one or two people that didn't want their child in her class, but overall, most white people were just as glad their child was in her class as any.
What about Coach Simmons, the high school?
Jim
Simmons, yes, sir, the football coach and athletic director. You remember anything about him? He was actually hired, I believe, just before your time.
As far in relation to integration, I don't recall much about. I recall that we played Dunbar High School, which was all black, right soon after we had integrated, and everybody was scared to death. I think we had about as many lawmen as we had people attending the ball game, but the stadium was packed.
Is that here in Dieball?
Yes, that was the old stadium over here. And I think they said there were, our stadium probably didn't hold 2,000 people. I think they said there were about 5,000 people there. And because they both had good teams, and I think they may have been undefeated when they played each other at the time. And Dunbar won, but all the kids on the field on both sides conducted themselves well, and the crowd did too, and there wasn't a need for the officers, really.
He, according to the school board minutes, Jim Simmons was one of several candidates for the head coaching job. And again, this was before your time, mm-hmm. but it was interesting. And I hesitate to mention it because I might quote it wrong, but he was essentially hired, or the candidates were asked the question about an integrated sports program, and that, you know, that was sort of the litmus test. That,
yeah.
You know, would you play black students, and would you have an integrated physical education program? And the successful candidate, you know, had to answer yes to both of those. And some of the students who we've interviewed, Lewis Landers, for instance, you know, credits Coach Simmons with, you know, that initial integration for welcoming and encouraging the black athletes to come over and, you know, welcome them into the program and to help smooth things over.
Okay. I'm not familiar with it at all.
Okay. Anyone else? I won't throw out specific names, but anybody else that comes out in your mind involved with the process? Faculty members?
Yeah, there was Miss Odessa Wallace, so yes. Was in the black faculty. She was a fine lady too, and taught here for a lot of years afterwards. She taught both of my children as. Of course, at that time in the junior high, they worked around to different teachers, but she had them all, and she was a good teacher and a good citizen and good supporter. I think she supported integration, and she wasn't outspoken about integration, but. She was just she just lived a good life that supported it, and she got along well with the white students too. I'm trying to think who else there was over there at that time. Mr. Jeffro, Algernon Jeffro. He left. Didn't have anything to do with integration, but he was. Ag teacher and so forth, and
I interviewed Mr. Jeffro, and you know he went from that to into scouting.
Yeah,
the scout master full time, as I understand. Some of it we think may have had, you know, not directly related to integration, but maybe the indirectly, you know, as the part of the issue we think is that as the schools integrated, you know, really what you had in those first year or two were black students coming to the white school.
Yeah.
And really what was happening is the black school was losing students and therefore, and in some cases teachers. You know, Mr. Jeffro left, you know, it was kind of both a cause and an effect. But, you know, they actually, I know Mr. Massey was concerned about, you know, not having enough students to make it and then just how that would affect the overall schools, because even though they were still segregated, it was still the die ball school system, and that did affect funding and many other matters at the state level.
Right.
You know, in the big context of everything, you know, it there was change across the board.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about Mr. Pate. Anything you remember about the transition between Mr. Pate and Mr. Foster? I think they might have served for a few months together to kind of get Mr. Foster up and going, or
you know, well,
I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Mr. Pate was a fine man, a gentleman. Like I said, he was past his prime, and he didn't. You couldn't really. According to the way I remember him, you couldn't get him to commit to being behind the program. He didn't. I feel like he didn't like it, and so he didn't put his best effort forward. But I think he cooperated well with David Foster and Mr. Of course, I get him. David Foster, and just say everything good about him, because he was an outstanding gentleman. And if it really didn't matter if Mr. Pate was there to help him or not, because he knew what he wanted to do and took care of it.
Do you remember the process about Mr. Foster being hired, selected? And I really, just so you know, I know really nothing about that, but I was just wondering if anything that stood out in your mind about how he was selected to be the replacement for someone who's been here for so long?
No, we interviewed several people. We just let it be known that we were looking for a new superintendent. And David was over at Stephen F. Austin. And he came, and I'm going to say the first go-round, I voted for somebody else. And I felt kind of bad about that ever since, because he was a wonderful superintendent, and we had a good number of people apply, and I think they were all talked with about handling the integration business and going through it, and David just knew what he wanted and how it should be done, and if it wasn't right, he wasn't going to do it. And he was just, he's as good a superintendent as we ever had. We had, of course, while I was on the board, we had Mr. Pate there a year or two, and then David for about 12 or 14, and Don Robbins, and Don came from state. He worked for the state, going around and taking care of troubled schools, getting them their problems taken care of, and they're in debt and so forth. Wilmer Hutchins up around Dallas and so forth. He was with them a couple of years, and the state, same various places, but he decided he wanted to be superintendent on his own, and he came, and he was an excellent superintendent too. And after that, I don't know about any of the rest of them. But they all, they all, you know, knew that integration was here and here to stay, and so there wasn't ever any problem with them. They supported it.
Do you remember now? And from some of the things you've said, you may have already answered it. But I just wanted to try if specifics about the process, maybe not the process as far as discussions at the meetings themselves about the integration issue and what are we going to do and how are we going to do it. I mean, certainly if you can recall some specifics, that'd be good. But just some of the bigger factors involved, such as disposition of the teachers, you know, when we are going to integrate the schools and maybe the facilities, you know, are we going to use this? Which campuses is going to be what? Are there going to be adequate facilities here and there? The cafeterias, the transportation, social interactions, you know, just the whole experience, I guess. You recall anything specific about just that part of the process?
I can't remember anything specific about it. There was, you know, there was a lot of discussion about the teachers. You hate to say, well, we discussed that maybe some of the teachers over at Temple School weren't qualified, but they were there teaching, and so immediate integration, I think we kept everybody there, but we did feel that there were a few teachers that weren't up to par, and the superintendent, I know Mr. Foster looked into their background and what they had done at the schools and so forth, and feeling like we had to keep a few of them, we put them, I think, in programs that we felt they could handle without shortchanging the kids, both the black and the white kids. I don't know, that may not sound right, but anyway, I believe that's one of the things that happened, and I don't believe any of them were put out, but we just kind of waited till retirement came along, and of course there were some poor white teachers too, and I think that when Mr. Foster came on board, he went over all of them very well, and we had some that left both, what had been both schools.
And y'all felt comfortable with Mr. Foster's decisions and...
Yes, and he was aware that, you know, that we would be looked at closely by the feds when to make sure that our staff was integrated, and he made sure that there was reason for those to leave that did leave. But other than that, as far as facilities, I think the recommendation was that, you know, the Temple School over there be the junior high, and of course, there was just the three schools at that time, and some of the community was concerned about their children going on that side of town, but once the school got spruced up and some money was into it, it looked better, and Mr. Foster had the way the buses ran lined up, and the places where the parents could park and so forth, and it all went well, and people, I think, after the first week of school, weren't concerned anymore, to the best of my knowledge.
Okay. Now, you were on the school board 12 years.
Right.
During that time, of course, change happens on a daily basis, but over the course of a 12-year experience that you had, anything... sticks out in your mind as major issues in that 12-year period, and if so, where and how was integration in that? When would you say that integration was completed? And I guess where I'm coming with that, we know the dates of when, you know, the school board met and this and that, but as far as from a person on the school board, that issue is completed. And I guess I'm also putting this into the context of, for instance, Lufkin's experience, where it drug on and on and on. Anything you want to comment on that? Or I didn't really ask a very good question.
Well, not, you know, I think, you know, the first year there, there were a lot of little problems, but as I said, there overall everybody got along well, and even though I live in Lufkin now, it just tickled me to death that we did it so well in Dieball, and Lufkin got screwed up on it all. And I think.
Did anyone on Lufkin school board ever approach you or the school board in Dieball, like, what are y'all doing? How are you doing it?
Not. No, they may have talked to Mr. Foster, but I'm not aware of it because
really, I mean, the South, I mean, everybody was going through the process. Everybody's process was unique, I guess.
Well, and, you know, Lufkin always looked down on Dieball, so they wouldn't want to come down and ask how something was done.
Yeah.
But they sure envied us having David here as superintendent because. He was a whole lot better than who they had at the time, and I don't even remember who it was, but our whole situation just went so well here, and I think the black churches, they met at their meetings. Some places the black churches raised Cain and so forth, and weren't much help, but the pastors here were help, and they came to the schools on opening day with integration and so forth. Reverend Simmons and I can't think who the other man in particular was.
So they were on the campus the first.
Well,
day?
They were. Yeah, I guess they were. They were pretty much around out front and so forth,
okay.
Just to be there if anything,
okay,
any
yeah.
problems happened. And
so I don't really understand what you were saying about the black churches.
Well, they
overall,
they didn't. The pastors didn't. They hadn't ever stirred up any ill feelings about how they were treated or anything, how the kids were treated, and they encouraged the people, you know, the black people that went to church there to get along, they probably did better encouraging people than the white man. I mean, I only know speak in my church, but I don't think anything was ever said in my church about it, as far as I know.
One way or the other.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I think the black churches were a help in that, because they can be a help or a hindrance sometimes, it seems like, but they were good. And overall, I think being a company town, everybody, I think, felt like they knew Mr. Temple was in favor of it. I think everybody knew that. And I think they felt like they should get along.
some people would put it this way, that, you know, Mr. Temple may not have ever addressed, you know, directly to anyone, or at least anyone, you know, in the capacity that was on, like, the school board or something like that. But the phrase, I think Stacy Cook used it, was that he certainly set the tone.
Yes.
That he, just through his leadership, just set the tone, and everybody knew what eventually he wanted without him specifically saying what he wanted.
Yes.
Anything... Going back to my question about other issues, anything, and you know, it doesn't have to be integration, but in that 12-year time, just your experience on the school board that really stood out. Like I said, you and Mr. Pavlik came on the same time, and I think went off at the same time.
Yeah.
And y'all were also, we might say, local merchants. And I appreciate you sharing that about how you came on about the concern that you had.
Then after, when we went off the school board, then I was elected, appointed, whatever it is, to Region 7 Service Center Board. And so I was on it for 6 years, and Carl went on City Council before too long, and then eventually I went on City Council with him. But school board is much more interesting and exciting than city council is. At that time, we had things that all our facilities weren't up to par for the handicapped, and ran into that a lot in the region meeting too. You know, it doesn't matter if it's only one handicap. Everything's got to be up to par. And sometimes you wonder if it's really necessary. But it's kind of, some people get stirred up about it, about as much as they did integration, because some of the schools really hated to spend the money that was required. But one of the things that, I was president of the board one time, and one of our teachers was...
Is this the Die Ball School Board?
Yes.
Okay.
One of our teachers was caught using marijuana. And, of course, at that time, marijuana was, you know, it's not like today so much. And so, we, of course, right away, we fired her. And So we had to hold a hearing, hold a court almost with her lawyer and our lawyer, and I had to conduct the meeting, and there the crowd came. We had the school library, and it was just filled to overflowing. And anyway, we had to hold a hearing for her, and boy, that had me so nervous. I was just about had diarrhea. And, you know, those kind of things, then it didn't go that badly. So
that was more stressful than integration.
It was. It really was for me. We upheld our vote 7-0, and, you know, got rid of her. And sometimes I think back, and we had one young lady. At that time, of course, if a young lady got pregnant in school, out she went. And we had this young lady got pregnant, and so we let her go, and her folks and her sister and all asked us, please don't do that. But no, we'd send the teacher to go to the house and help her now and then. But anyway, she had the baby, and she eventually finished school and raised the child, and just raised a wonderful child. And she didn't get married for a number of years. Later, the child was probably grown or just about grown, and this child is active in the schools, and I think she may be married to a coach. And it's, you know, I've told my wife so many times that just bothers me that we did something like that. But anyway, that's the way it was done at that time.
Yes, sir. Did you serve on any committees during your time on the board? You mentioned you were chair, president of the board, I guess, for a while, but any other? And I just mentioned that mainly to see if that'll jog your memory about issues or anything.
I don't think we did much as far as committees, committee meetings are. Of course, maybe they told you, and if they won't, Buddy probably will, about building this gym over here and not using cypress wood to build it out of. We thought Buddy was going to stroke out at that meeting, but he just couldn't believe that Carl and I and Mr. Capps and Mr. Connor voted for brick. And, you know, Buddy said, you know, this is a wood town. How can you build it out of brick when it's a wood-based town? But anyway, I still think it was the right thing to do, but it was.
Interestingly, when I first met with Harold Maxwell about the History Center project, and he cautioned me to not let Mr. Temple, Arthur Jr., talk me into building a metal building.
But I don't recall any kind of committees or things at that time. We didn't even go to state school board conventions, stuff like that. I don't know. I guess Carl and I were too busy with our own businesses to worry about any of that. We probably should have. Might have been better board members, but anyway.
Well, Mr. Albert, I believe you've covered all my basic questions. Just in that overall context, you know, I certainly didn't ask all the questions that maybe I should have, or, you know, anyway, so I wanted to give you the opportunity. If there's anything that you would like to say or comment on, give you the opportunity anyways.
Well, I don't, not really much. We're always proud of the Diabol schools, and I know when we were on the board, especially after Mr. Foster had been here several years, we had a lot more people wanting to transfer from Lufkin down here and from schools around than we had wanting to go out, because we did have a good school with a good, strong academic background.
Would these be white and black students?
Yes, both.
So.
And it, I don't, I'm not familiar enough anymore with how the school operates and everything. People seem to think that it's going fine. There was a time I thought that perhaps they didn't have as strong a superintendent as they should have had. It kind of seemed like they kind of jumped around for every 3 or 4 years for a while. But I hope that they will keep the academics strong. It's so important, I think.
And again, that's coming from a from your education background in the sciences. How would you? I know I said that was all my questions, but
yes.
In that context, because I remember something you said early on in the interview. You know, with your science background and medicine, you specifically mentioned test tubes over at the black school. So. Where would you say the white school was, even at that time, say with the sciences? And then once integration happened, where was that as a concern, especially with your background, the science program?
We had, as far as the white schools, we had a good science teacher in high school in Bill Greer, who was an excellent teacher. But at the same time, the chemistry lab here at Diboll High School didn't have much of anything either. Science wasn't worried about too much. I think Mr. Greer taught every science there was that was taught, you know, biology and chemistry. It just and that was one of the things that we were concerned about when I say we were talking wanting our kids to be ready for college. We want them to have a good background, because if you haven't had some chemistry in high school, boy, it's tough when you sit in that big class in college and try to absorb it. And it slowly got better, but we never had a real good science program, I'm sorry to say, the whole time we were in there, especially in laboratory sciences. I don't know, not enough students were interested in it. And so I know Bill Greer, he said he could only do so much because there just wasn't the interest.
Right.
And if the students don't want to take it, well, you know, you can't make them do it.
And you may not have been involved at this level, because you know, I know probably in general, you know, that was the case. But like from the background of someone at the integrated schools, say at the black schools, junior high age, who have had their whole education experience has been in a separate but unequal environment. And again, you may not know the answer to this, but I'm just wondering about how they assimilated into a program where, you know, they'd maybe never seen a test tube before. And now, you know, how big was the learning curve, if you even knew of such thing?
Well,
for the black students.
That I don't know, but there weren't many black students. There were very few black students took chemistry and physics and that type of thing. We had... They had some, you know, very intelligent students there at Temple High. I can't remember the names of these two in particular, but that went on to college and were very successful in college, and this went out in the world and blew things away. But you'd have to talk to some of the people over there to... To know that. I just cannot think of this one girl. She was just amazing. And, I wish I could remember her name.
It's okay. All right. Well, unless you had anything else, that's about all I had.
I don't guess.
Okay. Well, Mr. Albrecht, thank you very much.
Well, you bet.
Okay, I'll stop this.